Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, second hour of the show. Great to have you with us. All right, calm before the storm. Every time I turn around, the amounts on this seem to be getting bigger. I mean, it was first around here in State College. At first, it was like, okay, it's going to be 4 to 8 inches. That was a few days ago. Now it gets closer than 6 to 10. Now this morning, I look at it, it was 10 to 15 inches. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. It's going to start tomorrow afternoon, and they've already made some adjustments in the Penn State schedule, for example. Like tennis, for example, was postponed. They took a men's lacrosse scrimmage. They moved it to, I think they moved it to early tomorrow. So they've done things like that. The wrestling match on Sunday with Nebraska is still scheduled for 1 in Rec Hall. We'll talk with Jeff Byers about that in just a few moments. And then in hockey, Penn State will take on 4th-ranked Ohio State tonight at Pagula at 7. So that's no issue. Obviously, the weather today is no issue. But tomorrow, they have already made the decision to move the hockey game and drop the puck at 3 tomorrow at Pagula because of the impending storm. The storm's supposed to hit here about, start snowing about 1 or so tomorrow. So they're going to take the hockey game, make it at 3. Now, men's basketball, obviously, Penn State's on the road. And we'll be at Minnesota tomorrow night. 8:30 will be the tip-off on beginning at 8 o'clock. And stay with News Radio 1070 WKOK for the latest weather forecast. Also for any closings, cancellations, and so forth. You can always check out our website for any of that as well. We'll keep you up to date on everything as this storm goes through. All right. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I mentioned today's the calm before the storm, so stock up. So go stock up. That includes, if you enjoy your beer, hey, great. Go get some. Yeah, they have the best selection of imports, domestics, microbrews. Maybe you like a wine cooler. Make sure you have plenty of water. Brewers Outlet has plenty of that. They have plenty of soft drinks. Lots of snacks. I mean, you'll love that. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels of the dills, as always, and indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Look, if you're in the market for a car, and many of you are, do yourself a favor. Go over to Sunbury Motors first, right? I think you're cheating yourself if you don't. Go over there because they have, obviously, a wide variety of great products. They have a great sales staff there. So easy to talk to, deal with. They want to know your situation. They want to make sure whatever fits your budget. They want to make sure it fits your lifestyle. And then the service department backs all of this up. They're second to none. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Miles Bridges of the Charlotte Hornets last night against the Sacramento Kings, posterizing.
Tony Parker. Shot clock is down to 2.
Had to make a decision, and it was whether he was going to be in a poster or not. He decided no.
Indeed, and Miles Bridges, former Michigan State star, knocked it down. And speaking of Michigan State, they stopped Nebraska's 20-game home court winning streak last night. Nebraska, by the way, the last team to beat them at home was Kansas by a point a year ago. Michigan State won last night 70-64, and Michigan State's now won 19 consecutive Big Ten regular season games. It's amazing. Now, in between, they had that loss to Michigan in the Big Ten tournament, which obviously I was at that game. It was at Madison Square Garden. But 19 consecutive regular season wins now for Michigan State. That's phenomenal in this league, considering how deep it is. All right, talk about depth. The Penn State wrestling lineup has incredible depth. Incredible depth. They'll take on 7th-ranked Nebraska this weekend. Looking forward to it. It's great to bring in the outstanding play-by-play voice of Penn State Wrestling, and that is Jeff Byers. Jeff, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, you got to go with what you know, and English is barely what I know, but trying another language would be pretty ugly on the old broadcast.
Imagine wrestling in Spanish. I'm going through Pat Dungy's notes yesterday, and Pat does a great job. And I looked at the 8 weight classes. Those 8 wrestlers total 114-3. I mean, when you actually give the number, does it even surprise you?
Yeah, there's a couple of things at play. And obviously, I mean, it is very impressive. I don't care who you're wrestling at this point in the season. I will say it is unusual for Penn State to be at this stage of the season. And, for example, Roman Bravo Young in his weight class has only faced one other ranked opponent. Jason Nolf has, I think, only faced a couple, although he's going to go through a gauntlet here of sorts coming up. It's just been unusual the way this season has unfolded that Penn State has not had more matchups at more of the weight classes against ranked. And I'm talking about top 20, not even top 5 or top 10 ranked kids. So that has played a factor. But listen, you're talking about a team here that does have a chance, and we'll see how things play out. But this is a team that has a chance to put its mark as one of the all-time greats, not just at Penn State, but in the history of the sport. I still think, despite some of the fans and media's reaction to 10 kids losing this past weekend, I still think this team has a chance at setting the all-time scoring mark at the NCAA in Pittsburgh here in March.
Jeff, it was my impression in the Wisconsin dual meet that Wisconsin decided to play it like an early 1980s basketball team. We're going to hold the ball. We're going to play four corners. There is no shot clock, so the first team to 30 is going to win, and we hope it's us. I felt like Wisconsin wrestled to not be majored or teched or pinned.
Yeah, I thought more so. I think there was certainly some of that with Wisconsin, especially in the upper weight class. I thought we got a full dose of that from Northwestern on Friday night. Northwestern, to me, was a little more frustrating just from a fan standpoint because I just didn't think you saw a lot of real wrestling. I thought Wisconsin was at least trying to be a little more strategic, trying to kind of pick spots, definitely being very careful, well-scouted in terms of not wanting to give up cradles, to the likes of Bo Nickel and Shakur Rashid, and definitely being a little more wary. But I actually, overall, I thought Wisconsin did a little more actual wrestling than, for example, Northwestern on Friday night. And listen, as Taylor said, this is the reality of what this team is going to face throughout the course of the season. A lot of coaches that are scouting this team and just want to kind of prevent those big moves from being scored against them. And, yeah, to a certain extent, if you can keep Bruce off to just a major decision, you've accomplished something because those guys are much more often than not going out and getting the technical falls in the pin. So, it's a matter of what you want to do strategically in these dual meets in particular. Now, it does change a little bit when you get to tournament time because – keeping a loss to a major decision, it doesn't actually do you any good, whereas it does in a dual meet. It keeps, team points off the board for your opponent, and if you can seek out a couple of upsets, as Wisconsin did on Sunday, suddenly you give yourself a chance here of pulling off a stunning upset against the top-ranked team in the country.
Jeff, I realize you do what you have to do. I understand it from Wisconsin's strategic or Northwestern's strategic point of view. But it doesn't help the sport. That's why something that's, to me, never given enough credit, Bo Nickel, when he won the national championship last year, and of course your call is as memorable as any. What made it special to me is that the other guy was going for it. Martin was going for it. He was trying to wrestle to win. It just turned out he got caught and got turned. But at least both guys, he had two guys out there wrestling to win instead of wrestling to survive.
Yeah, and I think, you'll see more of that in the postseason. And that's why, Steve, there's an ongoing debate, and the likes of Cal Sanderson and yours truly keep wanting it to be settled, and it just never seems to be completely settled. But that is why I think tournament wrestling and having the NCAA tournament be the determiner of the national champion is best for the sport, because in a dual meet format, and, Jay Robinson for years wanted the national champion to be determined through a dual meet. The problem with that is exactly what you're talking about. If you're talking about trying to promote the best that the sport has to offer, you don't get that in dual meets. And coaches will tell you there are times where they're setting a guy out. Listen, we're looking at the matchups here. We need you to just keep this to a decision. Stay in good defensive position, stay low. But you're not getting the best. In tournament wrestling, again, your team are not doing your team any benefit by keeping it to just a decision. That's not helping your team race. It is, you need to go out and win in order to score points for your team. And so you get guys that, even at the guys that are ranked 30th or 31st in the country, they're going out there trying to win and doing everything they can to open up and score points, because it's not doing their team or themselves any good. Again, you get 0 points whether you lose by decision or fall, and that's why, one of the reasons why I think tournament wrestling is the proper determinant of who is the national champion, because you're getting a true gauge of, okay, two guys truly going out there and trying to beat each other. Let's see who does what and who's better in that scenario.
Nebraska has 7 wrestlers who are ranked. Obviously, we know what's going on with Penn State. So I want to get very quickly, where's Vincenzo Joseph right now?
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine, Steve. He just was not feeling well last weekend. It's one of those things. He is pulling a bit of weight, and I think it's just an opportunity for him to maybe kind of regroup, regain, and make sure that the body is going to be strong here for the stretch run. I know Cal's been a little coy with the media, but I'll be shocked if you don't see Vincenzo Joseph in the lineup here against Nebraska on Sunday. And by the way, Vincenzo has Isaiah White is not chopped liver out there.
Right.
He is an explosive kid in his own right, and that has a chance to be a very entertaining match, because both those guys are very good with the hip tosses. Of course, we know about Vincenzo's inside trip, but they're both guys that kind of like to go for those big throws, and that has an opportunity to be a very high-scoring and very entertaining bout. But I think you'll see Vincenzo from here on out at 165. I don't think this is going to be an ongoing or future concern here.
Nick Lee obviously came in as a tremendous prospect. He did a lot of great things last year. He's 16-1 right now. I know you expect him to bounce right back, but what are a couple things you're seeing in Nick Lee?
Yeah, I think, up until Sunday, really, I thought he was as consistent a wrestler as anybody on the team. I didn't think he went out and wrestled a horrible match, and I'm not making excuses for him. I'm just telling you, he looked a little fatigued in the third period, and that is not Nick Lee. And I don't know, there's a little bit of flu ball going around, and again, I don't know that Nick Lee had anything. Telling you, he did not look like himself in the third period. And I do think the team across the board just looked a little flat against Wisconsin. And again, I'm not here to make excuses for them, but, you did make the trip to Evanston. There was a little bit of flu bug going around. You're coming back on an early flight Saturday morning, still trying to maintain right weight. And you had a Wisconsin team, again, that I think was very well prepared. I think Chris Bono does a fantastic job, has with all of the programs he's been with, in getting his kids ready and scouting the opponents. And I just think it was a combination of Penn State. I don't think they were overlooking Wisconsin. I just think they were a little flat from the travel. I think, a couple of guys might have been not feeling quite up to par. I think it was an inspired effort by Wisconsin. I think they really came in with a good game plan to give themselves a chance in that goal meeting.
What kind of progress have you seen from Roman Bravo Young? And obviously, he has one of the, you know, let's say it's a YouTube moment. It's unbelievable, the move, but you have to wrestle other bouts, and you can't have that move in every bout.
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me so far, Steve, with Roman is the way he responded to his only loss against Austin Gomez, because he did not have a great first day at the Southern Scuffle.
Right.
Was wrestling a very good match, actually, against Gomez, and then Gomez threw him to his back, and, I mean, it was a decisive pin by Gomez. But Bravo Young responded with a couple of good quality wins against good opponents at the Southern Scuffle. And since then, again, I think it's just kind of learning how to still be aggressive, but maybe not put himself in vulnerable positions. And he's a guy that's just so quick, Steve. I mean, he's got a lot of access, but his quickness is... I won't say there's nobody we've seen here at Penn State that has it, but, man, it's been few and far between that have that type of quickness. And we've seen it time and time again where he scores a takedown just by faking to one side, and he just comes back so quickly to the other side. There's just not a chance for the opponent to react. And I really think he's kind of figuring out some things in terms of what works and doesn't work for him at this level, at this stage of his career. And I just think he's going to continue to get better and better. He's a very smart kid, wrestling savvy, and I just think the more he's on the mat, the more he learns. And, he's very good on the mat. That's the area that he certainly made the most improvement in from when he first came to the Penn State campus.
Nebraska's in College Park to take on Maryland tonight. But as of right now, they would walk into Rec Hall with 8 ranked wrestlers, and 4 of those 8 are ranked in the top 10. It's going to be a good gauge dual meet for Penn State.
Yeah, big time. And I do think Nebraska is one of these teams that that dual meet wise really can give Penn State a good run for its money. I think Penn State, obviously, if it takes care of business, you expect Penn State to still be able to win anywhere from 6 to 8 of the bouts. But I think there's going to be a lot of really good individual matchups, and I think especially for some of the younger kids, an opportunity here to kind of gauge themselves against guys that have a little more experience, have proven themselves to some extent here on the national scene. And I just think this is a really good test for Penn State to get at this stage of the season. Then they go on the road for a couple of matches that they really should win, and then you get to the two kind of featured dual meets on the schedule with Michigan and Ohio State.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you, obviously there's so many positives you can talk about. Where's Devin Schnupp to you right now at 125?
Yeah, Steve, he's a kid that you just can't help but love and root for. He just keeps getting better and better. He's not as talented as you go up and down that line, not the other kids that Penn State has. But he's a kid that is eminently coachable and just keeps getting better and better, works like a dog day in and day out to get himself as prepared as he can. And, Cale's talked about it often. He is less concerned about results than whether or not he's getting 7 minutes of effort and a kid is willing to go out and open up and try to wrestle to the best of his ability. And Devin will give you everything he has. He got Tech fall against Northwestern, but he went out and wrestled hard for that first period and just got outclassed. That's Sebastian Rivera, obviously, right now the best wrestler in the country. But, Schnupp wasn't going out there trying to keep it close. He was going out there trying to score takedowns, and Rivera's just better than him. He's stronger, more physical, and at this point, quicker, the whole bit. But, Devin's a guy that's going to go out and give you everything he has every time he steps on the mat, and you can see the improvement. And I know he's a little disappointed, a little frustrated that it's not coming along resulting in better results overall. But again, you're looking at a kid that won one match for you last year. He's already got five this year. He's been in a bunch of bouts over both of those seasons. And I think the most rewarding thing Kale Sanderson will tell you and this coaching staff will tell you is that the fans are recognizing that effort. I mean, he got a standing ovation after losing this match this last Sunday. And the fans, I think, are following Kale's lead. And listen, you give us 7 minutes of effort, win, lose, draw, whatever happens, we're going to applaud you and respect the efforts you're giving. And it is not easy. You know, it's a little easier for the Jason Balls, the Bo Nichols, to go out there and put in a full day's effort because they're seeing those results and they're getting national titles to show for their work. Not even in there every day busting his tail and not getting the results, that sometimes can be a lot more difficult to go in with that attitude, upbeat and be positive and happy about the experience, grateful for the opportunity. And I can tell you, Devin is all of those things. And that is just a credit to him and his family and the way he was raised.
And also the best fans in the country for recognizing it. Jeff, thanks so much. Appreciate it. 1 o'clock Sunday, Nebraska. Appreciate your time as always, my friend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
We'll come back with more in a moment.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sundern Motors is bringing in the new year with a lofty goal. Sell 1,000 new Fords in 2019. You heard right. 1,000 new Fords. SMC knows they can achieve this lofty goal, and here's why. Sundern Motors Ford has 2019 Ford Fiestas starting at $12,820. That's a new car for under $13,000. Browse Central Pennsylvania's largest selection of four-wheel drive vehicles. Pick from 68 Ford Escapes, and they're slashed to as low as $17,820. SMC has all remaining 2018 Ford Explorers reduced by $8,000, starting at $33,985. Sunbury Motors has over 100 new Ford trucks with F-150s marked down up to $14,000 and Super Duties as much as $15,000. SMC's goal of selling 1,000 new Fords in 2019 will be your gain. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, proudly serving all of Central Pennsylvania and the Susquehanna Valley for over a century.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Final half hour of the show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Stock up today, the calm before the storm. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's bring in my broadcast partner, Dick Girardi, for Penn State basketball. Dick, be honest with you right now, I don't really have a lot of answers. I don't know if you do.
When things are not going well, weird things start to happen. And I was just looking back over the close losses, Steve, to try there's some common denominator. And the one thing I did find, Maryland, Nebraska, and Iowa, they were all down by one with under a minute left, and somebody hit a three for the other team.
Yeah.
Cowan for Maryland, Watson for Nebraska, and then last night,
Bohannon
for Iowa. And the common denominator on those shots was Watson's shot was, I believe, pretty late on the shot clock, and it was really kind of a lucky shot.
Yep.
Cowan's was definitely late on the shot clock. Wasn't lucky because he made it, even though it was really deep, and Bohannon's was wide open, even though it was deep. So, yeah, I mean, that and some of the other close losses, the Indiana game where they missed free throws, and DePaul and Bradley where they missed open shots and free throws. But, yeah, I mean, they're up to six last-minute losses, four of them in the Big Ten, and they only have two on the plus side of those last-minute games, and that's how you end up where you are.
You know, last year when you and I were watching Penn State, especially from about this point forward, you know, when Josh Reeves got back into the lineup, Penn State, for the most part, was making, quote, the winning plays. They were making winning plays. Are we watching a pattern right now that when you need one, you're, quote, making the losing play?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like. And remember, last year they just had a lot bigger margin for error because there were a lot of games they didn't have to make winning plays at the end because the game was over.
Right, they blew teams out. Yeah,
they were hammering teams. This team, and I think we realized that early on, just didn't have that kind of firepower to be crushing teams. In fact, I was looking again the whole schedule. There's really five what I would call pretty easy wins, three losses where they really didn't have a chance to win, Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin, and two other really competitive losses at Alabama and the NC State game in Atlantic City. It's so hard when every game kind of has the same plot line where you're in it and then you're almost waiting for something bad to happen. Yeah. It's like right now Iowa's kind of the opposite of where they were last year. Whatever could go wrong did. This year they starting to believe that something's going to go right, and of course last night for them it did go right. And on one critical play, it kind of changed the whole game. That missed shot, defensive rebound that looked like Penn State had didn't have, and then Bohannon hit the shot. Really, that was the game clincher.
That was the Watkins Stevens cancel each other out, both working and trying hard to get the rebound,
sure,
and then canceling each other out.
Yeah. I mean you don't see, that's a play you'll see occasionally, but very infrequently. But it is weird when stuff like that starts to happen. Some of it just becomes like unexplainable. It's karma, and unfortunately, there's only one way to get out of it. You gotta win some games.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when I got back to the hotel last night, I'm watching the second half of Illinois and Minnesota. And,
yeah.
I mean, who before that game predicted 89-62 for Illinois? Nobody.
Yeah.
But they just absolutely crushed it. It was crazy.
I mean, 95-68. They ran them out of the building on a night where a guy like Jordan Murphy, for example, who was a double-double machine, had 14 points and three boards last night. I mean, that was it.
It was just bizarre. And Amir Coffey was the leading scorer in Big Ten games, was 1-for-10. So you just keep showing up, which I know is what Patrick has been talking about, and you just hope something changes. But right now it's hard to be comfortable because you can tell, you can look at the players' faces, you can see their body language. It's like you're start expecting something bad to happen. And again, the only way you change that is to just make something good happen, and it's not easy.
Yeah, exactly right. It's not easy. Mike Watkins would be 70%. Do you think that'd be fair?
Yeah, no, I think he still doesn't have all of his wind back. And look, I love Mike. We all love Mike. And he posted something on Twitter today where he apologized for missing the free throws and some of his defensive plays. You know what? He doesn't have to apologize to anybody for anything. I love it, but it's not like he's not out there trying. He is. And just the fact that he's taken ownership of it, I think, is great. And you just feel especially bad for players like Mike, because this is his fourth year in the program. And Josh, it's his fourth and last year. And certainly Namar Stevens, who's, I mean, just inexplicably, I want to say last night, Steve, on open 15-foot jump shots was, what, about 2-for-10?
Yeah.
And those are his shots. Those are the shots he did. That was the offense against that zone was designed to get for him. He got them. And again, they score 82? I think we said it after the game. They could have had 95. They could have had 100 last night. They had that many opportunities, but it's just, again, when things go bad, they just go bad. Right. Who thinks he's going 4-for-18? You just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. So my follow-up on Mike is this. The first half, Iowa could not deal with Mike Watkins. Couldn't. Did you sense – I got the sense, I don't know if you did, that I felt Mike was fatigued in the second half.
That's possible. And also, I think Fran McCaffrey saw the same thing you did, Steve. They couldn't guard him.
Yeah.
I don't know how many possessions they went zone in the second half, but I would say it was the vast majority. And I think that was more than anything to slow Penn State down, because they were running the ball down their throat and having no trouble getting by people on the bounce, and to make sure that Mike Watkins just wasn't going to overwhelm them on the low post. They wanted some extra players down that way. So I think that was a good strategic change on his part, and it was an obvious one. And so, yeah, I think that's part of it. I think Mike put so much into it early in the game. Yeah, he just wasn't as fresh at the end of the game, and He's been back now for what, about 6 weeks?
Yeah, that sounds
right. About right.
Yeah.
And remember, you know, and people don't, they got to forget, people forget it, that he had a pretty devastating knee injury at the end of the last regular season. So it's not just the fact that he hadn't played, but he was also coming back from an injury. But yeah, I think you would have wished he could have been able to play earlier and he would have been more into the flow of it. But you know what? You deal with what you deal with. And right now you're dealing with 0-7 in the Big Ten. And I didn't see that coming in November or December. I really didn't, especially given the two December Big Ten games, how competitive they were. But it's really just come down to these close games. If instead of 2-6, you're 6-2, we're having a whole different conversation right now. But that's sometimes when you don't have that margin for error, it's just, are you going to be lucky or are you going to make the right play at the end? And they've been neither at this point.
There are 13 more of these regular season Big Ten games to come. Timing, of course, means everything, as you and I both know. Timing means everything. Well, the timing on this particular year with the, officially 301 in experience right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing right now the third-ranked schedule in the country. The timing of playing the Big Ten in a 20-game conference season doesn't quite work for Penn State this year, does it?
No, it does not. It's interesting. This is, you've been this way longer than I have, but certainly since I've been doing it, this is the hardest schedule Penn State's ever played.
That's right.
Not just the 20 Big Ten games against in a league where, you know, if they were calling out NCAA tournament teams today, you could get 10.
Yep.
You could get all the teams that are 500 or above into the tournament. That's never happened, obviously. So the league is tough. The non-conference, they were. It was not necessarily that they were playing great teams, but they weren't playing any bad teams. I mean, last year they played a lot of bad teams.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And they hammered them. And that ultimately takes a little bit of a toll. And in games where, you know, they've never been able to have all of their really good players play good at the same time. And that's, like last year, that would happen regularly, where you'd have all five of your starters would play really well, and that's when they would crush teams.
Right.
They just haven't had that. I mean, Lamar had a great start to his season, and then some of the freshmen wouldn't shoot well, and then maybe a couple of freshmen have good games, and Josh doesn't shoot well. It's been a bizarre year, and I know the coaches are perplexed, and we're perplexed watching it. I'm sure the players are confused, but
yeah.
You just got to keep showing up, and you got Minnesota in the barn Saturday night. I don't know where their head's going to be after what happened to them last night. And you try to just see if you can get a lead, keep a lead, and get to the finish line in front.
Yeah, and that's the key. Get to the finish line in front. I mean, psychologically, I think just one of those does a world of good for you.
I think if they had found a way to win last night, and I thought they did enough good things, and you mentioned some of the numbers, to win. But, I mean, Iowa in the first half making all the threes, which I didn't really anticipate, and then again, I give them great credit. They completely changed the way they attacked Penn State's defense in the second half. They were throwing the ball to the front of the rim, and they were scoring. Penn State couldn't get them out of there in the second half. And after a while, it was a question of who was going to finally get stops. And you mentioned it was Iowa at the end. They scored the last eight. And the turnovers that happened, there weren't many last night, but the ones that happened late. And, boy, they were, when you're in a one-possession game, you really want to get a shot up. And they had, I think, three possessions in the last 4 or 5 minutes, they didn't get a shot up.
Obviously, we have not seen everybody yet along the way. Before it's all said and done, we will. But which teams have stuck out to you and really impressed you that they've got a good look to them that – when March comes around, they'll be interesting to watch.
I think Michigan and Michigan State are in a completely different realm for the rest of the league. I don't even really think it's close once you get past those two. Look, there's a lot of good teams. Maryland has really surprised me that they played as well as they have. Certainly Nebraska with their veteran team, but you mentioned, and I think it was a good point, their bench is really short. Wisconsin's tough, but I just think Michigan and Michigan State, I think either one of them could be, or both could be in the Final Four. I'm not surprised by either. I'm probably a little surprised by how good they've been and how consistently good they've been from the get-go. So, yeah, I think and it's crazy. They don't actually play each other until late for another month, more than a month.
I know.
Technically, and I don't know if they're going to be, but they could both be undefeated in the league playing late in the year. I mean, it's hard to stay undefeated. I think Michigan, I believe, is at Wisconsin. I think Michigan State's at Nebraska.
They're at Nebraska, yeah. And Nebraska's won 20 in a row at home, and the last team to beat them was Kansas by one.
Yeah, and Michigan State has won, what did we say the other day, like 14 or 15 straight league games?
Yeah.
Some ridiculous number. I don't know if I got the number right, but a number that shouldn't happen. But, yeah, to me, as good as the league is, I think there's clear separation from the top two to the if you say there's eight others that have a shot to make the NCAA, I think they're lumped in. And I don't know that I could tell you which of that group I like the better, depending on really what night you see them.
You watched Virginia Tech because you watched it on your phone the other night.
I was. It was ACC Network.
ACC Network. It was not on ESPN or anything else.
Yeah,
it was on ACC Network.
The biggest game in the Commonwealth of Virginia between two in-state teams ever, and you can't watch it except on your phone.
On your phone. When you have watched Virginia, what do you think of them at both ends of the floor?
Well, they're more athletic than they have been. Their shooting is ridiculous. Their offense is relatively simple. I know exactly what they're trying to do just about every possession, but, man, they do it with such smoothness, and the cutting is awesome, and the misdirection is great. And all of a sudden, you look around, there's 25 seconds off the shot clock, and somebody is coming wide open. And it's hard to defend, and defense, they just don't ever make mistakes. That's why the UMBC game was so bizarre last year. And I know you and I talked about it at the time, but I think they made more mistakes in the second half of that game than they probably made the whole rest of the season on defense.
Yeah.
And I think that was more of a, oh, my God, we might lose to a 16 seed, and you just start losing all the fundamentals. But, yeah, I think this is the best group Tony's had, and I will not be at all surprised if they don't go down to Duke and win. What's that, Saturday night?
Yeah, Saturday night, yeah.
Yeah, I would like them against Duke, and I'm not sure who's playing for Duke because, I mean, it sounds like Jones is going to be out for a while. I don't know if Barrett's back or not, but I mean, Duke is as talented as they are. They haven't played anything like this because there isn't anything like this.
No,
there's only Virginia.
Right, exactly. And the pack line defense, and other teams play it. We saw a version of it. I think what Bradley played a version of it of pack line. No, obviously not to this level, but the way Virginia plays it. How important is it the way they play it that they bait you into taking threes that you really should not be taking?
Yeah, just about every shot it seems like you take is a shot you shouldn't take. Yeah. They're amazing at recovering on shooters, and that's because they're never too far away from the shooters. They don't end up running away from the guys they shouldn't be running away from, which is the problem with a lot of modern defenses. Everybody still, it's fascinating to me when you watch it, everybody to this day still wants to chase the ball.
Yeah.
That's really the last place you should be chasing right now, given the propensity, especially when you watch the NBA. I'm always watching these guys that slough off Steph Curry to help on the ball. Why are you ever leaving Steph Curry?
Ever.
So and that's what Virginia does so well. They just don't leave, and they're obviously beautifully coached, and they know who can hurt them, and they're never in a position to get hurt. And fundamentally, they just – it's a joy to watch. They just don't make the fundamental defensive mistakes. And if you take enough contested or difficult shots, and especially in a low possession game, and nobody plays lower possession games than they do,
right,
each succeeding shot is going to be harder than the previous one. I mean, I watch Virginia Tech, which is a really skilled offensive team, really skilled. They can make 10, 11, 12 threes a game. They look lost, and they look lost immediately.
Yeah. How about that? Interesting. You're always throwing or showing me a stat. Ever since you got your new phone, you're dangerous. Okay,
I am dangerous with the new phone. Yeah. That is correct.
It's all of a sudden I'll get the phone put in front of me. Right. James Harden, you showed me this the other day. Is he the definition of what the modern game is individually? And you can explain why.
Well, yeah. Look, there's never been any attempt to do what they're trying to do in Houston. And there was a great story. Was it the Wall Street Journal?
Wall Street Journal story.
Yeah, I handed you the other day. just on the amount of isolations. Basically, what Mike D'Antoni has done is said, all right, James, you go over there. You other four guys get out of the way. Don't bother him. Eventually, he's either going to shoot a three or he's going to drive and make a layup or drive and get fouled. And he's an amazing free throw shooter. He rarely misses. And they don't, and he also gets assists. I mean, if two or three guys come running at him, he'll throw it to the open guy. Yeah. He's a regular triple-double guy. But, yeah, he is setting all kinds of modern NBA records for most ISO possessions. And it's not a way you would ever think the game should be taught, right. But it's the way the game should be taught for his unique skill set, and they're doing it. And Houston looked like they had a lost season, and he's brought them back. He's putting up numbers, I mean, NBA numbers that you haven't seen on a daily basis since Wilt.
Right. And that was 50 points a game, Wilt,
exactly.
In 1962.
Right. I mean, you talk about the whole sport has changed. I mean, there's nothing even, it's nothing the same. But, yeah, it's just crazy. But, yeah, when you watch it, you just say, well, wait a second. What happened to the other eight guys?
Right.
They're never even in the picture.
Exactly. What happened to the other eight guys? And it's amazing, but, you know, that's where the game is trending. It's trending toward threes and the free throw line as to how you win and lose.
Yeah, now it's super effective, and I know we mentioned it on one of the recent broadcasts, but the best shot in basketball is the free throw. That's the most efficient shot, especially when you have a guy that's shooting 85% or 90%. You're gonna score a whole lot of points when you're shooting two free throws a ton for a guy that doesn't miss much.
Last time I heard coaching moves like this, it dealt with a guy with four fouls, and the coach said, "My man, you stand down there, don't play defense." Now, who did that?
it was funny. I remember that game like it was yesterday. I was coaching a CYO game in Baltimore, and we were playing at it. I don't remember who we were playing, but we were playing a team we really didn't have any chance to win if we didn't have our best player, and he decides to get four fouls in the first quarter, and rather than take them out, you know, my man, here's what you're doing. See that end of the court where the basket is? Just stand down there. You're playing no defense. We played a 2-2 zone, and he just played offense. I said, don't drive because they'll fall down and try to draw an offensive foul. Just shoot jump shots. I think he ended up with like high 30s or something, and we ended up winning by a couple. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you just gotta come up with unique ways to figure out a way to win games. It's like I was screaming at my TV set the other night as Maryland was blowing that big lead against Wisconsin.
Right.
I don't even know if you're watching, but I sent you a text. You probably didn't even understand. Just saying foul half.
Yeah.
At one point, Maryland was up three with like under a minute left, and Wisconsin hadn't missed a shot in like an hour.
Yeah.
I said, just foul half.
Right.
The worst that happens is you're still up by a point, and the likelihood is he misses the front end of a 1-1, and you got the ball up three. Instead, they let Wisconsin to three, and they tied the game up on. But you just got to not do things conventionally sometimes.
All right, Dick. Appreciate it very much. I'll see you a little bit later.
Sounds good. All right, Steve.
Dick Girardi. So look, take it easy during the storm. Just take it easy. All right, we'll all get back together here on Monday. I'm looking forward to it. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. And from the Sunbury Motors Studio, I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us on News Radio 1070 WKOK.